Today we get the chance to have a detailed conversation with Will Harvey of Harvey Capital. Will is a real estate investor. He's on the finance side of things now, and we talk about that. This is a pretty in-depth conversation about private lending, hard money lending, running a fund, and also about Will's journey in trying different things. He was a mortgage broker for a while, working for a lender, has done a lot of different real estate projects, and is now focused on launching. He's run a couple of funds, and this is going to be his first 506C that he's launching, hard money loan fund, where you can invest as a passive investor. And we talk about some of the differences between our two funds, my fund and his fund, and also some of the similarities and things that we like about investing in loans. So whether that's originating or buying first lien mortgage notes. Will gets vulnerable about a particular deal where he lost a good bit of money and talks about a lot of the lessons that he learned there. So hopefully you can take those lessons and avoid the pain that he, or similar pain from what he experienced. So this is a very practical episode for real estate investors, passive investors, and fund managers and operators alike. So I think you're going to really get a lot of value out of this. Thanks for listening.
From Adversity to Abundance, hosted by entrepreneur and seasoned real estate investor Jamie Bateman, is the ultimate guide for active and passive investors seeking clarity, mental fitness, and the confidence to make inspired decisions in the world of real estate. With a decade plus of investing experience across various niches and a background as a combat veteran, former Army officer, and multi-million dollar mortgage note company owner, Jamie brings a wealth of knowledge and inspiring stories to each episode. Through weekly episodes featuring insightful interviews with industry leaders and solo explorations of mindset and strategy, listeners will uncover actionable advice and tips to overcome challenges and build lasting financial success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, From Adversity to Abundance is your roadmap to turning obstacles into opportunities and achieving financial freedom.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman, and today we have with us Will Harvey of Harvey Capital. Will is in the Richmond, Virginia area. Will, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really good, Jamie. Thanks so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, thanks for spending some time with us. I know everybody's time is valuable, including yours. I'm excited to jump in because we have some similarities in how we run our businesses, I think. And so we can compare notes a little bit and speak to the listener about some lessons that you've learned along your journey. And this is going to be cool. So for the listener who may not be familiar with you, who are you and what are you up to today? And specifically, what is some of the abundance that you are living in now?
Yeah, so I can get into my background and all that. So I got into the mortgage business in 2015 after dropping out of the second college that I dropped out of.
Nice.
I'm a double dropout. I was playing football and had double hip surgery, and that was the end of that. So came home and got into the mortgage business.
Yeah.
And that is what got me just into real estate. Just caught the real estate bug, bought my first house long before I could even qualify for one. I had my dad co-sign.
Okay.
And I did a whole house hack. I didn't even know what that term was,
but
I had a couple guys live with me, and that, you know, pretty much paid the mortgage, and it was awesome. So,
nice.
did that. And, Then I started, after about a year, I started originating loans as a loan officer. The first year I was just kind of learning the business in the back end and just chomping at the bit, ready to get going.
Yeah.
And got out into production and had a great, had a really fun 3-year run. Was able to build up some reserves, buy some rental properties. I did realize that I don't like being a landlord. But it was great. And then I got going. This is end of 2019, I started a house flipping company with a partner, and we, I did that. I was focused on that for a few years, and but all the while I was just sort of migrating more and more to the finance side of things. It's really what I enjoy. I realized that, I'm not a big operator. I don't like we did great flipping houses. We had one of them broke even. That was our worst deal. And then we had, some of them that were six figure net profits. And so
Nice.
it
And this was
wasn't,
through COVID and all that, I sounds like.
yeah, which actually helped us
Okay.
tremendously. When we first, I left right at the, I left the mortgage business right at the end of 2019, and COVID happened right after that, early 2020. And me and my partner were like, man, what did we just do? We just left our jobs. And but then it ended up rebounding, and the real estate market went, just
And a
on
lot of people
fire.
were sort of stuck at home with, in some cases, extra cash to spend. And I know, like, at least on owner-occupied properties, people were doing additions and things because they couldn't leave their house. So, like, I want more space. And so I know in that particular space, the contractors and operators did well. And as you said, real estate prices kept climbing in general. But now, like, what does your business look like today? And then we're going to jump back and talk about some of the challenges that you've overcome. Some of the times you've lost money. What do things look like today for you?
So today they look like running more of, I run some funds, and I do everything I do is really on the finance side of things now. I don't own, aside from my primary residence, I don't own any real estate as, like a rental property that I own 100% of my own. There's a couple properties that I own with partners, a wedding venue and a boutique hotel, but I'm more of a capital partner on those, and I don't have any day-to-day responsibility. So today I'm mainly focused on a hard money business where in Central Virginia we're focused on just growing that and trying to be the best lender in that area. So yeah, that's the main focus. And I have another fund. We've sort of I've done some stuff, some real estate deals in the public markets actually. Most people don't know that exists, but it certainly does, and there's some
We can dive into that.
yeah, so I hope
Well,
that answers your
we'll dive into
question.
that in a little bit. And I do want to very soon jump into, maybe comparing our two funds a little bit, your hard money fund, and because it looks like it's yours is structured a little differently than mine, and it's just from an opera fund manager standpoint, it's fascinating to me how these things can be set up. What does a typical day or a typical week look like for you?
Typical day, I wake up sometime between 5 and 5:30, and I read the Bible. So I get in the Word, read the Bible, do some prayer, and really just try to, center myself, get my mind calm, and I find that that's a good way to start the
That's the
day. And
tone. Well, yeah.
yeah, exactly. And then I get to work. I work for a few hours, and then I'm with my family, getting them going for with breakfast and all that
Sure.
stuff. I have a 3-year-old and a almost 1-year-old,
Oh, man.
so I'm
Yeah,
busy there. And yeah, and
although
then
you're probably tired at 5:30, you probably need that either centering and prayer time
yes, I need that with a
as you
3-year-old. Yes,
yeah, for sure.
absolutely.
My kids are a little older, so, but I don't forget those days. I do remember
Yeah,
them.
no. Yeah, and I hear that you need it at all ages, and
Oh, for
all
sure.
it
The
just
problems
the challenges
change.
just evolve.
They
Yeah, exactly.
change. No one's story is the same, but the problems just, as you said, they take on a different form. But
Yeah,
it's less
exactly.
less
So
minute by
yes.
minute, less hour by hour. But it's there's still pretty big challenges, or can be.
Yeah, exactly.
So
So
yeah, go ahead.
yeah, no, so I get in the Word, and then I'm with my family after I've worked for a few hours, and the morning hours are when I tend to get my best when I tend to have my best work done and I'm
Yeah.
thinking the clearest, you know, the emails aren't flying at that
Right.
point. So, you know, that's when I really try to focus on the most important things and
Sure.
not try not to waste time responding to emails and things like that. I
Right.
do that, of course, but you know, I really want to focus those hours on really important, you know, high level stuff,
Sure.
and then as the day goes on, I just, you know, I get what I do what
Comes
I
your
need to
way.
do, check in on our
Yep.
pipeline with our, you know, with our processor and team
Right.
and everything,
More data, more like admin slash maybe reactive a little bit, just the problem of the hour type thing in the afternoon, maybe.
yeah, exactly. You just got to do
Gotcha.
whatever you have to do, and
Right.
yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty much my day, and then I stop work usually around 5 or so, and then
Okay.
back to family time until they go to bed,
Yeah.
and then you know, I'm either reading or trying to think through different things I want to do and
Right.
implement, and then it's off to bed and
So
started over the next
do you
day.
like being your own boss?
Yeah,
You hesitated.
there's no, I no, I'm just saying there's no, I would not do it any other way. I
Yeah.
mean, even when I was in the mortgage business, the 100% commission, you know, employees with I didn't have set office hours or anything like
Right. It's
that, so it
really
still
it's
felt
up to
like,
you. Right.
yeah. And I the job I just remember being like, man, there's no way I could do this the rest of my life. There's no way I could, you know,
Right.
just punch a clock, work 40 hours. There's no way.
No. I think I'd be a terrible employee at this point, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think there is a bit of a delay here. Hopefully that the listener can piece it together. But yeah, so talk to us about how you launched your private lending fund, why you got into, as you've said a couple times, the more of the finance side of things. Just briefly, I've been in the single family residential space myself as an investor since 2010, and I do still own rental properties. But since 2018, I've been much more focused on mortgage notes specifically. We have originated some loans, but we're not in the hard money, lending business like you are. So that's a little bit different. But people ask, are you in real estate or are you in finance? And it's like, well, yes. Because we do take
Right.
back properties and I do own properties, but primarily I think of it, like you said, more on the finance side of things. And we're not typically lending. We buy already existing debt, and it's typically on owner occupied properties. So I have dabbled some in the private lending slash hard money space a little. When we do have a fund that buys primarily first lien mortgage notes. So I'm familiar with the space, but yours is a little bit different, that you're set up. And I think you're a little more geographically focused, which makes a ton of sense for some really solid reasons. And we're spread out geographically, I think, a little bit more. But why did you get into that space? I mean, you had experience, obviously, as a lender, as a working for a lender, originating loans, making commissions by having loans originated. And then but what appealed to you about the finance side of things, and why did you start your fund?
So I actually never intended to get into hard money. So
Okay.
my original intent with that, I started a, you know, small friends and family fund
Yeah.
a couple or 3 years ago,
Okay.
and we just had some cash sitting on the sides, and someone called me, an old coworker from when I was in the mortgage business,
Yeah.
and he was like, "Hey, I have this borrower that makes good money, but he just
Right.
can't show any of his income because he's from another country.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to do a hard money loan? He's putting down 75%,
Wow.
and you know, he's willing to pay, you know, 3 points and 10%." And before he
Wow.
even got done with the question, I was like, "Yeah, that's a no-brainer."
Yes.
You know, first lien position at like 25% LTV. It
Wow.
wasn't a hard decision.
No.
So I did that loan, and then I just had a few more just come to me from my network, and we had this fund, and again, fund wasn't the main focus of it. We were more so at the time looking to do like syndicated deals. We were investing in we got involved with the mobile home park and a built to rent multifamily deal, and we've done some public real estate investing through that. And but the hard money was a great way to get capital working on a short-term basis when we didn't have a home for it. So I did that through that fund for a while, and then just realized that hard money is a really interesting business, and we've done well with it. And I have a lending background and a house flipping background, so I feel like that all,
You
I
know
know the
both sides.
space. Yeah, I know both sides pretty intimately, and so I ended up last year deciding to start another friends and family fund for that, and it's dedicated to just hard money. So, and we've done that for a while and feel like we have solid proof of concept, and I have an attorney as we speak drafting the docs for a 506C fund,
Got it.
which will allow us a lot more flexibility and be able to really scale this thing.
Got it. Okay, that's what I, see on your website, harvey-capital.com. Yeah, my fund is a 506C as well, and so I can talk all
Nice.
about it. And I've had that fund for about 4 years now. And it actually, from the investor standpoint, looks pretty similar. Based on the little bit I know about your fund, the returns are pretty similar, monthly distributions. But again, I think the assets that we're investing in are a little bit different. They're both loans, but you all are going to be originating loans. So you're, I think, well, in our case, I noticed on your website you said you're going to issue 1099s, and correct me if I'm wrong here, and I know I'm in the weeds a little bit, but in our case, our investors buy a share of the fund and they are issued a K1 each year, which we just met the deadline a few weeks ago, and which is not always the case with a lot of fund managers. We pay monthly distributions, same range, 8 to 10%, depending on the investment amount. And haven't missed a distribution in the 4 years the fund has been open. Again, we buy
Amen.
existing debt. Yeah, it's been good. It's consistent, reliable. I mean, we're not going to compete with, crypto returns when they're good, or oil and gas or something. I'm not trying to compete with those returns, but our commitment period is
Steady
one.
Eddie.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a good diversification play for people that maybe you already have money in a real estate syndication, or some of the other asset classes you mentioned, or maybe you have too much in stocks and bonds and you want to just do something different. But so those are both of our funds. The 506Cs that we're talking about are for accredited investors. Okay, so that fund is about to launch, it sounds like. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And I
Got
think
it.
you were touching on the 1099 versus K1 and just all that. So I actually got that idea from it's the person that we he founded the company that it's called Lender, LENDR. It's the software that we use
I've
for
heard of that.
our it's great. It's for our investor and borrower management. It's really cool. It's a portal that investors log into, your borrowers log into, you manage all your loans through it, collect payments. It's awesome. Anyone that's a hard money lender, check it out. But
I've been listening to is it the Hard Money Bankers, is that right? Or
oh
they're
yeah,
in,
they
yeah, they
push it.
push it. They're in the Baltimore area and some other areas, but
That's right.
I've never used it myself. But yeah,
So
he came up or gave you that idea.
he he shared the structure of his fund with me, because he originally, before starting that, he was a hard money lender, and that's how he realized that, you know, it's a very low tech industry,
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
there's definitely white space to create a product like that. So he did, and
Right.
it's doing very well. But yeah, so he just showed me the structure of his, and I was like, oh man, that's so genius
Yeah.
to be able to advertise that, you know, you send 1099s versus K1s. You know, everyone hates K1s
Yeah.
and having to chase them down, and a lot of
Right.
times they get extended. I'm in a bunch of passive deals
Right.
where, you know, there's always two or
There's always
three every
delays.
year that get delayed, and you got to file your return late. And
Right.
you know, a lot of people, I'm used to it because I've dealt with it for years at this
Yeah.
point. But somebody that's newer to investing in these
Right.
kinds of privately syndicated deals or funds, they might be a little shocked when you're
For
like, hey, I
sure.
don't have your K1, you got to file an extension.
Yeah,
And
that happened to us.
so
My first fund, sorry to cut you off. The first fund I did
no,
was
it's okay.
more of a non-performing distressed note fund. And that we did that for 3 years before my current fund. But yeah, we had a couple who had not, this was their first sort of alternative investment, you know, into a fund or anything similar to that. And we were late that first year on issuing our K1s, not very late, but they didn't even realize, and we had put this information out, but they'd already filed their tax returns, and they were upset, you know, because then they got a
Yeah.
K1 after they'd submitted their returns, and you know, sorry.
Yeah. Right.
But it's very commonplace in the industry to be late on the K1s. You know,
Yeah.
so yeah, for
So being
sure.
1099 just completely eliminates that. You know, 1099s have to go out by the end of January. So,
Right.
you know, somebody that would be on the fence about investing in something that issues a K1 where they own a piece of the actual business,
Right.
the 1099 is just much simpler and
Sure.
sort of answers that objection.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in your case, with that fund, the investor is actually purchasing a promissory note issued by the fund, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So they don't actually own a piece of the fund. They just own
Right.
a note to the fund.
Got it.
Yeah.
And then do you intend to stay, you know, geographically focused with your fund in the Virginia area?
For the time being,
Yeah.
so I've talked about this a lot. So, you know, when I speak to guys that have gone through downturns
Yeah.
and have experienced pain in
Right.
real estate lending, whatever, a lot of times a common theme is that they'll say that, you know, the real estate that I owned locally did fine
Right.
because I knew it really well, but it
Yeah.
was the real estate that was outside of my market that really struggled and led us to bankruptcy or led
Right.
us to just really, really struggle.
Sure.
And I've heard that over and over and
Yeah.
over. And I just believe that real estate is so localized, and
Right.
having that local boots on the ground knowledge is super important. Now, for buying notes
It's a little
like you're
different.
doing, it's totally different. You
Right.
can't focus on one market. There's not enough
No,
notes to
there's not
buy
enough
there.
inventory for
Right,
sure.
exactly. So,
And yeah.
yeah.
And there are some other, I mean, your business in your lending to real estate investors who are managing a project who and those the that project heavily relies on contractors who are doing the actual
Exactly.
work, the rehab work. We're not doing that. And so, you know, there are various reasons why, you know, it's difficult to scale your business model from that standpoint, more beyond
Correct.
the local area. But at the same time, you can also, you know, generate a loan, you know, that I can't just generate. So,
Yeah.
there's some key differences there. I mean, I do like the fact that we're diversified geographically,
Yeah.
but the truth is, I don't know all of the markets that we're investing in super well. I mean, that's just a fact. I can't be an expert in in all these markets. But that's also why we typically buy, less than 75%.
I was just gonna say,
What we'll call it investment to value, you probably deal more with LTV because
ITV.
yeah. And so, we're not lending for the most part. But yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think people with your business model or a similar one either struggle, like you said, when they try to expand geographically, or they're very deliberate about opening up a new office in a certain location, and then they slowly expand their operations that way. But it's almost impossible to do it nationally. Would you agree with that?
I think it's impossible to do it. Oh, I think it's not very wise to do it nationally unless you start from one point and just naturally expand from there. Like that's what my goal would
Your
be
vision, yeah.
to outgrow the Richmond market and then expand around there. Not
Sure.
expand, to California or Florida, but just
Right.
start to, hey, this market is pretty close to us. Let's go there. Let's go to,
Sure.
Charlotte, North Carolina. That's not terribly far. And you know
Right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead of just going, hey, we're going to open up a satellite office in Los Angeles. I mean,
Yeah.
that just wouldn't make sense in
For
my
sure.
opinion.
Yeah. And just to piggyback on what you're saying about people getting into trouble, and there are other ways that investors get into trouble. I mean, many ways, but one, not just geographically, but a lot of times when the markets tighten and deal flow is harder to come by, deals are just, maybe the yields are compressed or whatever, and that creates pressure on the fund operator to, or just the real estate investor to go out and just do deals outside of their buy box. We that's how, we're buying notes, so it's our buy box, but outside of their wheelhouse. But the flip side is you do need to get uncomfortable sometimes, and you do need to expand, and you do need to shift a little bit and listen to market conditions. So there's a lot of art and strategy involved. It's not just, oh, I only buy in this buy box and I'll never change. Well, you do need to pivot it sometimes, and you do need to adjust. But if you do that too drastically or too quickly, you can really get, in some serious trouble. Speaking of that, let's talk about
100%.
The show is From Adversity to Abundance. I know you've lost some money on some real estate deals yourself. So, back to kind of your personal story a little bit. Let's talk about, when things haven't gone well for you. What happened there? Was there anything you could have done to prevent that? What were some of the lessons learned? Does a deal or two come to mind?
There's one in particular. It was this goofy property that I bought with two partners in early 2022. So this was right before the Fed started jacking up interest rates, and everyone was riding high on the whole zero interest rate environment that we were in. And we had flipped a few properties before that and been very profitable. And I found this we were this was when I was flipping houses, and we relied heavily on Google Ads, and we got a lead, got in touch with the homeowner, and went to see the property. The property was about we ended up buying it for $860,000, which was well outside of our typical. We tried to buy this was in Northern Virginia. So it's an expensive market, but
For
we
sure.
tried to be, we like to buy around, call it 200 to 400,000. So this was way outside of that. And, I was the one quarterbacking it. We didn't really have a cohesive plan or a clear plan as far as what we were going to do. I was sort of thinking, well, if things go well and we can flip it, then let's flip it. Otherwise, let's run it as an Airbnb. And so it was just kind of, we didn't have a set plan. It was just like, hey, I think we're getting a decent
The
deal on
deal.
this and the market's going crazy, so let's just do it. And it was just a total disaster. We couldn't sell it for what we wanted. And long story short, after fumbling around with it for a year and a half, getting a property manager, just trying all different kinds of variations on how we could operate it as a short-term rental. We ended up dumping it and took about a $70,000 loss on it. So it was painful, but We lived to fight another day. It wasn't one that wiped me out or anything, but it stung and it wasn't fun to go through. But I will say that I learned way more from that than I have on the deals that have gone
For
well.
sure. So that was 70 grand, like that you lost personally, not across
Now, I
everybody.
was a partner in it. That was the
Gotcha.
entire
Okay.
amount. So
Got it.
my portion was less than
Yeah, and
that.
it's all relative. It depends, what it's 70 grand to your group may be different to a different group, and but that still stings no matter what. And I, for sure can what you just said resonates with me. I mean, I've lost money in real estate deals, and even a business that I was a partner in. It kind of sort of got. Well, not roped in. I mean, I chose to, but it wasn't originally my idea to do this. We started a loan servicing business, and so
That's
many
a thankless
lessons.
business.
Oh, I don't recommend it. I mean, I have a lot of, I've used probably six or seven loan servicers now, and I mean, I still get frustrated with them, but I have a lot more empathy than I used to,
A little
because
bit of
it
grace
is,
for them.
yes, it is not fun, and it's. The margins aren't great, and so much, with the licensing requirements for the types of loans that we buy, there's a lot more red tape than what you guys deal with. There's a lot more licensing, mostly from the states, but requirements. But it didn't go well from a financial standpoint. It didn't go well at all. But the reality is, I learned a ton. And now, I mean, I'm not trying to learn that similar lessons the same way again, but I'm not seeking out adversity per se, but I learned so many lessons about, leadership and people, and probably one of the biggest, well, one was scaling organically. So we did the whole, like, we went out and got 25 licenses in 25 different states, and then it was like, build it and they will come kind of model. And we should have just started with one or two states and gotten enough revenue with a few small clients, and then just added a few states here and there. From a licensing standpoint, that's one big one. And then the other one was probably, I probably should have quit earlier, to be honest. Because I tend to be a little stubborn, and you've got people who are working for you who, they need their paycheck, and it's like, well, you don't want to shut the whole thing down. So it's I learned a lot through that, just to your point. I mean, that's really what the I mean, I learned a ton. So I am grateful in that, from that standpoint. But what would you say, I mean, what would you say you would do differently, other than, oh, I wouldn't do the deal, but how would you, if you had a similar deal come across your desk, what would you do differently now?
Where I was undisciplined was just, I think that, like you said, when you don't have a ton of deal flow, you can talk yourself into doing a thinner deal. And that was a big contributing factor. So I didn't have a ton going on. I had sold my last Airbnb. I had some Airbnb rentals, and I sold one about 6 months prior to buying this. And I remember being like, I will never buy an Airbnb as long as I live. And then it wasn't even a year later and I'm buying this one, because you just get bored. And it's like you forget all the all my wife and I joke about it, where people have kids and then they forget how hard it is when you're in the baby stage, and then you have another and you're like, man,
I
I
can't.
don't remember any of this. Like, why did it's just so
Oh, for
hard.
sure.
And that's sort of what happened on that deal, where I just was like, why did I do this again? And but that really solidified in my mind, like, when I'm bored, don't do that. Don't just be patient, adopt a Warren Buffett type of mindset, and just wait for the fat pitch to be thrown your way, and only swing when you have the perfect pitch. Don't swing at everything. You don't need to. You can just wait and wait and wait.
Yeah,
So
that's very true.
that's what I would say is the biggest takeaway
Makes
from that.
sense. And I a couple of points is, one, I mean, for those looking to possibly invest with you, I mean, I do think I personally feel comfortable, more comfortable placing my capital with somebody who has made mistakes and who has lost money and who has been through a downturn
Likewise.
before versus somebody who just rode the wave and, maybe thinks they're a genius and it's like, I don't know. I'd rather place my money with someone who has some battle wounds or some scars. And then secondly, I just want to, the space that we're operating in, the hard money lending slash buying first lien mortgage notes. We do buy seconds as well, but mostly firsts. It's just you can lose money for sure, but in general, it's a little bit lower on the risk spectrum, if you will. It's a little bit lower risk than some of these other asset classes. So,
Right.
the operator matters, the fund manager matters considerably, but I do also think the asset classes that you and I have chosen to operate in are fairly low risk. There's always risk, but in general, I think
We'll need
it's
to sleep
on.
somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And the real estate is the collateral. So if you're not lending at 100%, LTV for based on the ARV. I mean, that's not my world, but if you're not lending like to that threshold, you should be able to get out of most deals, at least get your capital back, right? So,
Yeah.
I love the space that we're operating in. So, where do you see you're going to launch your fund soon? Where do you see things going in the next 1 to 2 years for your business?
I just want to keep building the right processes and scaling. I think that, the more that I can do that, the more it'll allow us to really build a well-oiled machine and allow us to scale beyond just like a lot of guys operate locally and they have a good business and they make good money as a hard money lender, but they're a one man band and they're not really able to get to scale because it's only themselves and all the knowledge lives in their head. And so I think that motivating a team and getting other people involved in this is important. So that's really what I'm focused on now.
For sure, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you have to, in order to scale any business, you need to leverage other people's time or money or both. So running a note fund and or running a hard money fund, hard money syndication, offering, whatever, really comes down to three legs of the stool, and I didn't come up with this, so I can't take credit for it, but I use it all the time. But it's raising capital, finding money to invest. Two is finding deals, to invest the capital into. And then three is managing those two, managing the capital and managing those deals. Where we end up spending a lot of our time is asset management, actually managing the notes, because we do also buy distressed debt and those, working through foreclosures and bankruptcies and things. It takes a lot of management. But I'm curious on the capital raising side, and I know your other offerings have been, more friends and family. What have you done already to get that ball rolling, and what are your plans to raise capital? How are you going to reach those passive investors, or I guess lenders technically, but those investors for your offering?
Yeah, it's a great question. So my plan, I have a pretty decent network of people that have invested with me in past deals, not just the hard money stuff, but real estate deals, standalone real estate deals in the past. And so that's certainly an area. And then the next biggest one that I want to really focus in on is the wealth advisor route. So positioning this as the bond alternative and just setting it up that way where that's how we position ourselves and we can pitch the whole the fact that we issue 1099s instead of K-1s. They don't have to chase us down. They don't have to get angry phone calls from their clients wondering where a K-1 is and So that's really my focus is to play the long game and go and lean hard into that channel. There's a few other ones that I plan to do, but I would say that's where a lot of my focus is going to go.
I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, we certainly post on social media and things, but at the end of the day, our biggest, our most fruitful source of, investment capital has been our current investor base. And whether that investor is
It's
adding
relationship
additional
business.
capital, and that to me shows that they're happy with the service, the communication, and the returns that they've been provided thus far. So it's additional capital from those existing investors or referrals from those investors. And then, as you mentioned, potential referrals from wealth advisors or people who are connected to people with money. Again, it's then they already have that social proof of, hey, Will's done a good job for me. He can probably do a good job for you as well. So, makes a lot of
Bingo.
sense. What do you see as what's one of the biggest challenges you're facing right now in your business? No challenges. It's all easy.
No, there's definitely challenges.
I'm just kidding.
I would say that for me, what I've really been focused on lately is bringing on, and I'm pretty, I should be pretty close to having this person. I feel pretty good about who I've recently offered a job to, and but I struggle with documenting our processes and just getting everything going from an operational standpoint.
That's
So
tough.
I need that person to help me, do all that, implement things, and so I think that once that is in place, it'll really, we'll really be able
It
to
is.
get moving.
That is a big, it's always a challenge. And we use Loom a lot and to record, how to do certain things or whatever. And you can take those transcripts and use them, but the truth is then we change softwares and that whole, folder in our Loom library is useless. And like, why did we do that? But it is an important effort to undertake for sure. To be able to document your SOPs and your processes, because you can't scale otherwise, you can't hire. So that makes a lot of sense. All right, you ready for some rapid fire questions, Will?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. What's one thing that people misunderstand about you?
Oh man, what a deep question.
That one does trip people up. It's less rapid fire in reality than the others.
Don't know. I've never really thought about that. Maybe that I would say it's not necessarily about me, but it took me a while to figure out. I always liked real estate, and I always knew I wanted to be in real estate. But I owned rental properties, realized I didn't like being a landlord. I flipped houses, didn't, that wasn't what I wanted to do forever. I've just done a bunch of things. I've operated properties as a GP, and it's just not my thing. And so it took me almost a decade to figure out what I wanted to be and what lane I wanted to be in real estate. And that's more on the finance side. And I've done some investing in real estate through the public markets, and
Yeah, we were going to
that is
circle back on
something
that.
that
Talk
people don't even
about
know.
that. Sorry to cut. We'll get back to the rapid fire questions. What does that mean exactly, and how does that work briefly?
So a couple, I'll tell you how I started doing it. A couple of years ago, I put together a very small fund with myself, my own money, and then two immediate family members. And I was just going out with that and looking in the public markets for interesting opportunities, not necessarily real estate related, but just things that I could understand and where I felt like there was a significant discount to what it was worth. And I ended up stumbling upon this this deal. It was a liquidating trust that traded over the counter, so it had very little exposure. It had not a ton of liquidity, but I found it. And long story short, they owned it was formed in connection with JCPenney's bankruptcy. So JCPenney filed bankruptcy in late 2020. They got purchased by these two big mall operators who then recapitalized everything, and they took the operating business and separated it from the underlying real estate that JCPenney owned. And they took the real estate and they spun it into this liquidating trust and had the had it just trade over the counter, and all the creditors involved in the bankruptcy just were given shares in this liquidating trust. And I'm sure that they just dumped them and just recouped whatever they could. And then you had this liquidating trust that anybody could go out and buy over the counter through your Fidelity account or whatever. And so I came across this, and I don't know how familiar you are with cap rates, but
A little bit.
okay, so basically I could buy this portfolio, I could buy into this portfolio of JCPenney properties at 50 cents on the dollar. And then they were turning around the trust. The manager of the trust was tasked with selling these properties just to, real estate investors. And they were turning around and selling these properties at a dollar. So I bought into them at 50 cents and got a 12% yield just on the lease income. And then they were turning around and selling properties and basically doubling what the price that I paid. So that was a great early win for my that friends and family fund I put together, and we put a good chunk of the fund in it. And that was just something that I had real estate knowledge, and it was this weird quirky deal that flew under the radar. There weren't big fund managers looking at it, and
Interesting.
we
Yeah,
did very well on it.
we've never talked about that on the show in the last 4 years that we've had the show. So anything like that. So where does somebody find a deal like that?
Just if you look, if you it's easier if you have some kind of investment screener, and you can look up, REITs, you can filter by real estate companies. But there's also companies that maybe have there's one example that I didn't invest in this, but people that did ended up doing very well. It was this company that operated somewhere, I think they were in Illinois, outside of some major metro there, or Oklahoma somewhere. And the company was founded, like 100 years ago, or more than 100 years ago. And at the time, the real estate they owned was rural and wasn't really worth much. And what they did was they sold cattle. Their business was it was like an auction platform for people to buy and sell cattle. And over time, that real estate just got more and more value as the more and more valuable as the core of the city kept expanding.
Interesting.
And they ended up sitting, they were sitting on this real estate that was now more valuable than their operating
Their
business.
business,
And they ended up deciding to just liquidate everything. And when they announced that, the stock price jumped up. But, had you known what they owned and could do some research on it and saw that there was a, imminent catalyst there, you could have invested in something like that. And again, they weren't a real estate company, but they owned valuable real estate, and their plan was to liquidate it. And so there's deals like that out there. You just have to look really hard to find them.
Well, my son would be upset if I didn't point out the pun that I could make, which was catalyst.
I
It,
like
there was
it.
an imminent catalyst. So
I
sorry, I
didn't
couldn't
think of that.
resist.
That's a good one.
Anyway, that was really bad. All right, let's fly through these rapid fire questions. You ready?
Cool.
All right.
I'm
If you
ready.
were given $10 million tomorrow, Will, what would you do with it?
I would I would go out and I would just keep doing what I'm doing. I would do hard money loans, and I would probably invest in, and I would probably start trying to find more of those publicly traded companies.
There you go. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, whom would you choose?
Warren Buffett.
Nice. What's some advice that you would give your 18-year-old self?
Oh man. Stop doing drugs and alcohol. I got sober
Oh.
very shortly after that. So
There you go. Hey, that's good
it would
advice.
always help to do it sooner.
Yeah, right. What's a controversial or unconventional strategy that you see in your industry?
I would say that, for us, we're in the asset-based lending space. So a lot of guys focus really, really heavily on the asset. I do that, of course. We're not going to lend over a certain percentage of what the ARV is, and we want to make sure the as-is value is there, and that we have a good cushion. But I put a ton of emphasis on the borrower, their character. I record meetings that I'm in with people so that I can analyze what was said and just what and try to pick up on red flags and things that I might have missed while I was in the conversation. So I put a lot on the qualitative, component of who the person is, their experience, their character, and all
That
that.
makes sense. Yeah, I mean, in our space, that's when we're running due diligence on a particular asset. It's the three Ps: it's the paper, the property, and the payer. And they all matter quite a bit, especially the paper matters quite a bit because we're buying notes that may have an assignment chain that's extensive. So I need to make sure what I'm buying actually is an enforceable has an enforceable lien. Back to the questions. What is a book or two that you can recommend for our listener?
I always recommend, it's not a book, but it's a collection of letters. There are Warren Buffett's annual letters that he writes to his shareholders, and you
Oh,
can get
right.
them going back even before Berkshire Hathaway when he had his early partnership. And they're just so loaded with wisdom and investing philosophy, and I highly recommend them to anyone.
You said a collection of letters. I was thinking like the New Testament or something.
Well, I recommend that as well.
They're not all letters,
Yeah, a lot are.
Will Harvey, what's one question you wish I'd asked that I have not asked?
I was just for to talk about something that is an ego boost to me. I wish you
Yeah.
would have asked
Do
me
it.
about the note that I just that I bought. I bought it in December.
Yeah.
It just paid off. I wish you would have asked me about that.
Yeah.
It's probably on a percentage basis the best deal I've ever
Yeah,
done.
if you're ever in the mortgage note space and you get an unexpected payoff, I don't think there's really much better than that from a return standpoint. Especially, I'm presuming you bought it at a discount. Is that right?
It was a 0% note
Oh,
and it had a
wow.
balloon on it. It was not a owner occupied property and had a balloon. We bought it at a really low ITV and I felt
Pretty good about
that,
it.
on the risk was there. And even though it was 0%, and bought it at about $45 and
How much
yeah,
was,
it paid
sorry,
off and
what was the discount? I'm sorry.
we bought it for 20, about 27,000, and it just paid off for 58,500. So it was
And
a, yeah, it
you held
was
it for what,
phenomenal.
th three less than 4 months?
Yeah, bought it right before Christmas, and yes, yeah,
About
it
3
just paid
months.
off. I think last week.
Yeah, so about 3 months. So that's amazing.
The
That's awesome.
annualized return was off the charts.
I
Probably
mean,
will never do anything like that again.
I mean, it's the, you know, I for our buy box, we don't typically buy anything that's less. It has a coupon rate of less than 7%, for various reasons, because we also do modifications and I have a little more wiggle room if there's a higher interest rate, but
Yeah.
0%. But the balloons are hard to price because, what's the exit strategy?
Exactly.
How are they going to come up with that money? But apparently they did in your case. So congrats. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, they were
Yeah, but
flipping it. It was,
okay.
it
Yeah.
was,
Well, it's a business, it's a space you know. So,
yeah.
awesome. Will, where can our listeners find you online?
They can just go to my website. It's harvey-capital.com, or they can just email me, will@harvey-capital.com.
Awesome. Well, Will, thank you so much for spending your time with us. Really appreciate it. It's been really good. We got into the weeds a good bit, and also you were vulnerable and shared some of the losses that you've experienced, shared some of the information about that. And thanks for spending your time, and I wish you the best of luck with your new fund.
Thanks so much, Jamie. I really appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. And to the listener, thank you for spending your most valuable resource with us, and that is your time. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
All right, here's the deal. You work hard for your money. Isn't it about time you put your money to work for you? If you are an accredited investor, check out LabradorLending.com. Our Integrity Income Fund provides monthly cash flow from an investment backed by hard physical real estate. Our income fund, which is uncorrelated to publicly traded stocks and bonds, invests in first lien mortgage notes diversified by geography, property value, and borrower type. So you're not investing in one project. You're investing in a diversified portfolio of first lien mortgage notes. Our Integrity Income Fund aims to pay its investors monthly distributions at a preferred rate of return of 8% annually. Possibly the best part, though, the fund showcases a short 12-month commitment. So you can invest your capital today and have access to that capital in 1 year. Check it out today, LabradorLending.com.